Mark's startled cry. The twins laughed. Did they think it was funny? The red rain. The blood-red rain. The rain of all the victims' blood. The dead crying their red tears down on everyone. The dead. The reigning dead. Their red tears steaming in her soup bowl. Leah flung another spoon of the red rain, the blood-red rain, spoon after spoon splashing on the white kitchen wall, tears rolling down her face, sobs wrenching her throat and chest. The red rain splashed on the wall, splashed, splashed again, till Mark wrapped his arms around her from behind, wrapped his arms around her so tight the spoon fell from her trembling hand. "Hold on to me, Mark. Hold on to me." Where did those words come from? "Hold on to me. Don't let me go back there."
Chapter 25.
"When will Mom be back?"
Elena lifted the whole toaster waffle to her mouth and bit off an end. Mark took a long sip of coffee from the white mug in his hand. "She just left an hour ago. She was taking the first jitney. You already want her back?"
Elena gave him the eye roll. "Just asking, that's all."
"She has meetings today. She's staying with her sister in the village tonight. She'll be back sometime tomorrow afternoon, okay?"
"Okay. Why are you such a grouch?"
"Sorry. Just tense, I guess. I didn't want her to go. She seems so shaky. She can't seem to leave that damned island behind her."
"Dad, language."
Elena motioned toward the twins having their breakfast at the table. "Maybe some meetings in the city will do her good, give her something else to think about," Raj chimed in from the other end of the table. Axel on her lap with an egg-stained face. Elena swallowed a chunk of waffle.
"Does Mom's cell work? I need to talk to her. You're being totally stupid and unfair."
Mark shrugged.
"Yes, everyone tells me I'm stupid and unfair."
Across from Elena, Samuel and Daniel giggled. Daniel leaned toward Axel.
"How's my monkey boy?"
Axel stuck his tongue out, pleased with the attention. But Roz snapped at Daniel.
"I wish you wouldn't call him that."
"He likes it."
"I'm 14, Elena told Mark, dropping the waffle onto the plate. "All my friends go into the city on their own."
Mark sighed. He spun the coffee mug between his hands. The cuckoo clock above the sink chirped 8 times. They were going to be late.
"You know my feeling on this. Why bring it up now?"
Elena's dark eyebrows formed arched V's over her eyes, the sign that she was angry.
"You're a total phony, Dad."
The twins giggled again. That made Axel giggle, too. Roz tried to wipe the caked egg off his cheeks with a paper napkin. Ira kept his head down, concentrating on his Cheerios, keeping out of it.
"Me? A phony? You wrote a book saying parents should let their kids do what they want, but you, that didn't include letting a bunch of 14-year-old girls go traipsing around New York City with no plan or idea of what they're going to do."
Elena balled her hands into fists and let out an angry growl.
"We don't traipse," she said through gritted teeth.
"Let's table this for later. We're going to be late." He balled up his paper napkin and threw it onto the table.
"And stop tossing my book back at me. I know you haven't read it. The book is a piece of research. It doesn't mean I can't make decisions as your father." "Phony, Dad," the eye roll again. "You're a phony and a grouch."
Mark watched the twins gobble down the last syrupy pieces of their toaster waffles. "How are you boys doing in the guest house? You like it back there?" He had to change the subject.
"We love it," Samuel said. "Our own house. We never had our own house. Our house was always crowded with lots of strangers, don't you know?"
Daniel said.
"Really? Well, it was nice of Roz to give up her place for you, wasn't it?"
"Mark, they've already thanked me 100 times, Roz said, obviously pleased. "And they were so sweet. They both helped me carry my stuff up to the attic. They're very hard workers."
Grinning, the twins raised their skinny arms, doing muscle poses, showing off non-existent biceps.
"Well, I didn't think it was a good idea," Mark said, "but I'm glad if it works out.
Your own secret hideout." He glanced at the wall clock. "Come on, guys, get your backpacks. I'm driving today because Mrs. Maloney wants to meet the twins. Tomorrow you go back to the school bus."
Ira groaned. "I hate the bus. I get bus sick every day."
"Get over it," Lena said helpfully. She bumped him from behind. They bumped each other up the stairs to get their backpacks.
Roz stretched and smiled. "It's going to be so quiet here in just a few seconds."
That was Axel's cue to start crying.
"What are you doing today?" she asked Mark.
Autumn and I are going over some foreign contracts and some mail. Then I have a meeting. A guy from the Blakeman Institute is coming here at 4. Weird. He's coming all the way out to Sag Harbor? Is he bringing you a fat check? Mark laughed. You and my wife are a lot alike. She asked the same question. Well? I hope so. I'm counting on this grant. I won't get any book royalties for another 5 months.
Yay! The twins came bursting into the kitchen with their brand new blue canvas backpacks bouncing on their backs.
Let's go, guys, Mark said. The principal wants to meet you two.
Rule the school, Daniel cried, pumping a fist above his head. We're going to rule the school. Rule the school. Rule the school.
Mrs. Maloney was a solid woman, with short salt and pepper hair over a square, no-nonsense face. She wore no makeup. Her green-gray eyes were the most colorful parts of her face. They radiated humor and intelligence and were enough to make people find her attractive. Her silky tan blouse pulled tightly over her bulge of a stomach, and even from the other side of her cluttered desk, Mark could see that she was straining her stretch-tight brown pants. A tube of Pringles and a can of Pepsi on the edge of the desk revealed that she didn't care much about her weight. She greeted the twins warmly as Mark ushered them into her small office. Daniel took the chair beside the desk. Samuel sat across from the desk. Mark watched from the doorway. The principal showed them she already knew how to tell one from the other, thanks to a previous visit from Leah, and she gave them school maps and copies of last year's yearbook, which the twins seemed quite pleased with. Mark knew quite a lot about Mrs. Maloney. She had first been principal at the Sag Harbor Elementary School next door before moving to the middle school last year. Sag Harbor had a large Irish community. They were the carpenters and landscapers and housekeepers, waitresses and pub owners. Some said they came here because the weather so near the ocean was close to the weather in Ireland, but more likely they came because they had relatives here. Mrs. Maloney and her husband had emigrated nearly 20 years ago from a town named Wicklow when they couldn't find teaching jobs in the local schools. She still had her Irish accent, which made her sound as if she were singing instead of talking, and added to her warmth. She joked with the twins, and they seemed delighted with her.
"There's less than 2 months left of school, lads," she told them, turning serious. "But it should be enough time for you to learn your way around and make some new friends." "We want to rule the school," Daniel cried suddenly.
That startled her into a laugh.
"Rule the school,"
Samuel repeated, as if it was a chant.
"I like that," Mrs. Maloney said, gray eyes flashing. "Miss Montgomery will like that too."
Then she added,
"She's your teacher. Normally I would split you two up, but since it's so late in the school year..."
She raised her eyes to Mark, who was still leaning in the doorway.
"I know we don't have any school records for these boys. Is there any chance of locating them?"
Mark frowned. "We're trying, but we haven't been able to find any records for them. No birth certificate, no family ID or anything. It's such chaos down there." Mrs. Maloney tisk-tisked, shaking her head. "The records were all blown away or underwater," Mark continued. "But we have someone looking for us. A woman Leah met down there named Martha Swan is trying to find whatever she can find." She nodded, then glanced at the wall clock above Mark's head.
"I guess that does it. Welcome to Sag Harbor, boys. We're very happy to have you. Mark, will you help them find room 204? It's the second door upstairs."
"No problem," Mark said. Mrs. Maloney was fumbling her hand over her desktop. She raised her eyes to him.
"Did you see my watch? I'm pretty sure I had it right here on the desk."
Mark shook his head. "Well, sorry, I didn't see it." She peered under the desk, pulled open the middle drawer and gazed inside, then moved a stack of papers.
"That's odd. Did you boys see a silver watch here on the desk?"
"No, Mum,"
Daniel answered, eyes lowered to the desktop.
"I didn't see it. I didn't see it either, Mum. Can we go to class now?"
Samuel said. Chapter 26. Autumn came to work after her classes. Mark was glad to see her. After his book tour, there was a lot of work to catch up on, but at 3 o'clock she was suddenly sitting in his lap and his life went out of control. She showed up a little after one, breezed into his office down the hall from the living room and dropped a brown paper bag on his desk.
"Cheese Danish? I stopped at the Golden Pear."
Mark turned from his keyboard and swung the black leather desk chair around to face her. He made a grab for the bag.
"You are the best."
She smiled. Her eyes glowed.
"I try to be,"
she said in a sultry whisper that surprised him. She tugged off her red hoodie and tossed it on his office couch. Autumn wore a yellow scoop-neck t-shirt over a short brown pleated skirt. He couldn't help but stare at her bare legs, lowering his eyes to the yellow sandals on her feet. Her white blonde hair fell loosely over her shoulders. He didn't remember her wearing lip gloss to work before, and that citrus-like scent was new, too. She grinned at him, as if she had a secret she was keeping. He suddenly had the idea she was posing, standing in place so he could admire her. She glanced back to the door. "No one home?" He opened the brown bag and tugged off a piece of the Danish. "No, Leah's in the city. I took the boys to school for the first time, and Roz and Axel are doing the grocery shopping." She leaned toward him. The lemony scent intensified. The lower-cut t-shirt revealed more perfect, creamy cleavage. "And what are we doing today?"
Mostly mail, and I have a number of requests to answer. Appearances, some radio things."
She sent a strand of hair off her forehead with a toss of her head. Mark took another bite of the cheese Danish.
"Oh, I shouldn't eat this. Wish I had more willpower."
Her eyes flashed.
"You? No willpower? Really?"
She tossed her hair back again.
"Are you going to travel more?"
"No, the book tour's over. I've done everything I can. Now it's up to the publisher." He swallowed another chunk, tried not to stare at her boobs, which were at eye level. She stood so close. "Besides, I should stay around home for a while, you know, because of the twins." She turned suddenly and walked to the window. She pushed back the dark drapes and peered out. A gloomy day, storm clouds filling the sky, the mostly bare trees shaking, April rains.
"Mark, how are the boys doing?"
"Okay, I guess. They seemed excited about school. They kept chanting, 'Rule the school. We're gonna rule the school.'"
"Cute. They really are adorable."
"Yes. Leah's totally over the moon over them. Roz thinks they're too adorable. She says all 12-year-olds are monsters. She's waiting for them to pull off their angel masks and reveal their hideous monster selves." Autumn snickered.
"Your sister is weird."
"She's a cynic. True, she's had a tough life, but she was a cynic before she had a tough life. When we were kids, I was always shocked because she had something terrible to say about everyone. But Jesus, she sure could make me laugh. Still can." He motioned to the narrow chrome-armed chair beside his desk. "Sit down, I'm going to hand you things." He patted a stack of folders on the desktop. She lowered herself gracefully into the chair, smoothed the pleats of her short skirt. Then she reached her hand out and gently flicked a crumb of Danish off the side of his mouth. His startled look made her laugh. "Should I talk to her about dressing less provocatively? Well, actually, I like it."
He pushed the brown paper bag to the edge of the desk. Then he pulled the stack of folders in front of him, opened the top one, and started going through the varied requests for autographs, for appearances, for charitable contributions, and a few for apologies. There were several lengthy letters, some of them from other child psychologists refuting his findings. One particularly venomous letter from a woman in Los Angeles accused him of demeaning the whole profession and holding all psychologists up to ridicule by espousing this crackpot philosophy designed only to arouse controversy and sell books.
Mark shook his head.
"She must have been speaking to my father."
"Your father?" "He wrote almost exactly the same letter. I told you, he found my book a total embarrassment."
"Your father wrote to you? He didn't call you?"
"We don't speak."
"You're serious? He's a shrink, right?"
"He's not just a shrink. He's a big deal in the New York Psychoanalytic Society. And he's got his Park Avenue office with his celebrity patients and..."
"He wrote to you?"
Mark nodded. "He needed to tell me just how much I had embarrassed him. I think my whole career embarrasses him. You know, I didn't match up to his expectations right from the start. I mean, he went to Harvard and I went to Wisconsin." Autumn chewed her bottom lip.
"How do you want me to handle that letter?"
Mark flipped through it. 3 pages, single-spaced.
"My psych advisor at Wisconsin gave me very good advice. She said, never defend yourself. She said you never can convince anyone, and if you try to defend yourself, you just sound weak. She said to always be positive, never defensive."
Autumn scratched her knee with her long red nails.
"So what should I say?"
"Say, thank you for your thoughtful letter. I really appreciate your taking the time to write." That funny reply made them both laugh. Autumn was gazing at him with such total admiration, Mark had to look away. Such a beautiful girl.
He suddenly wondered about her social life. Did she have a boyfriend? He shared a lot with her about his private life, but he didn't dare ask her personal questions. It might seem like prying. It might seem offensive, and she never offered much. Today she seemed different to him. Not just the sexy clothes, the secret smiles and the long gazes, as if she had some kind of plan, some kind of surprise. They went through the files. Then she set the stack on the floor beside her chair and stood up. She stepped close to him.
You're a psychologist, right? Can you read my mind?
He chuckled. I'm not a mind reader, I'm a psychologist. But yes, I can read your mind. You wish you'd save that cheese Danish for yourself, right?
Wrong, she took his hand, tenderly. You really can't read my mind?
Her blue eyes caught the light.
You really don't know what I've been thinking for the longest time?
Autumn, really, I... And then she was in his lap, squeezing his hand, pressing her hot face against his.
Autumn, no, come on.
She kissed his ear. Her breath tickled the side of his face.
No, we can't. I can't. I mean...
He tried to stand up, but he couldn't move. She turned his head and pressed her mouth against his. He could taste the creamy, sweet flavor of the lip gloss. And then she was opening her mouth, and his tongue moved despite himself.
No.
She held the back of his head and kept his mouth pressed to hers. He couldn't speak.
No, this is wrong. Please.
Kissing him, she took his hand and moved it between her legs, kissing him so passionately. Beneath the short skirt, her panties were wet. She pressed his hand into her.
No, Autumn, stop. We can't.
She uttered low gasps in his ear.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, yes.
Like a porno video. He felt his erection grow.
I don't want this.
But suddenly, he did. She stood up and pulled him to his feet. Then she reached under the skirt and lowered lacy black panties to her ankles. She flipped the short skirt up as she leaned over the desk. That creamy white ass, so beautiful. She grabbed the far end of the desk with both hands.
Mark, hurry. Oh, God, over the desk, from behind.
His khakis were down, and he was inside her.
This isn't happening. How can it be?
Sprawled over the desk, she moaned, rhythmic, soft cries. He buried his face in her soft hair. He lost himself in her. He lost himself. Lost. And came inside her. It didn't matter. All the doctors said he could never have more children. He stayed on top of her for a long moment, breathing hard, gripping the shoulders of her t-shirt, the creamy ass still moving beneath him. Then, heart pounding, he pushed himself to his feet. She climbed up slowly, turned to him, grabbed his shirt, brought her face close, and licked the side of his face.
Am I your best assistant?
A whisper that tingled his skin.
I want to be the best. Am I the best?
A door slammed. They both gasped. She squeezed his shoulders, eyes wide in alarm. Mark heard the twins' voices, footsteps. Autumn bent down, grabbed her underpants and tugged them on. She straightened her skirt, brushed back her damp, tangled hair with both hands.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
The footsteps louder in the hall. He was scrambling to fasten his khakis, still fumbling with the fly as the twins tumbled into his office, bumping each other, both talking at once. Zipper stuck, Mark dropped into the desk chair. Crossed his arms over his lap, forced a smile.
Hey, guys, how was your day?
Chapter 27.
The twins had their eyes on Autumn, who leaned against the side of the desk, her skirt still crooked, her cheeks bright pink.
How was school?
She asked them, sounding breathless.
Good,
Samuel said.
Yeah, good,
his twin added. What did you do today? Mark asked.
Stuff,
Samuel replied.
Just some stuff,
Daniel added. Mark tried a third question. Did you like Miss Montgomery?
She's nice, don't you know,
Samuel said, eyes on Autumn.
Nice,
Daniel echoed. Mark laughed. You guys were talking your heads off till you got in here, and now we get only one-word grunts from you. What happened? They both shrugged in reply. Daniel giggled. Mark studied them. They looked too clean, their new jeans and t-shirts stiff, not broken in, Their blonde hair lay perfectly in place like doll heads.
Did you suddenly get shy?
Autumn asked. She was working on untangling a thick strand of blonde hair. Mark didn't give them a chance to answer. Where's Ira? Was he on the bus with you?
The lad is taking the late bus, Samuel said. He was doing a project with Ethan.
Mark smiled, pleased to get so many words from him. So, did you boys rule the school today?
Not yet,
Samuel said, with surprising gravity.
Soon,
his twin offered. Their school day had gone very well, Samuel thought. Miss Montgomery split them up, seating Daniel in the front and Samuel in the back, but they didn't care about that. Samuel sat next to an open window. The April air smelled fresh and salty. He liked that. He spent a lot of time watching two squirrels collecting and devouring acorns at the base of the old tree across from the school. Daniel sat next to Ira in the front row. They didn't talk much. They weren't really friends yet. In fact, Ira seemed very uncomfortable around Daniel. Maybe he was still angry about Daniel trying to take his room from him. Maybe he just didn't want new brothers.
He'll get over it,
Samuel thought, watching Daniel and Ira ignore each other.
Daniel will win him over, one way or the other. He'll be true blue, that boyo.
And Derek? Samuel looked for him, but Derek had a doctor appointment and didn't come to school till lunchtime. Samuel and Daniel ran into him on their way out of the lunchroom. Derek wore baggy cargo jeans and a red and white New York Rangers sweatshirt. His eyes went wide and his mouth opened in surprise when he recognized them.
How did you get into this school?
He managed to find his usual bluster.
This used to be a good school.
It's our first day, Samuel said. We're in your class.
Derek bumped Samuel's shoulder with a pudgy hand.
You got any money? Mom forgot to give me my lunch money.
We don't have any, Samuel replied. We already had our lunch.
Let's see,
Derek said. He grabbed Samuel by the pants, spun him around with surprising strength, and began to dig into his pockets. Samuel squirmed.
Boyo, stop!
Daniel moved quickly. He stepped up behind Derek and with a powerful tug hoisted Derek's heavy backpack off his shoulders. Derek let go of Samuel and spun around furiously.
Hey, jerk, you almost ripped my arms off.
Sorry, boyo.
Daniel held the backpack above his head.
You want it? Jump for it.
Derek uttered a low growl. He narrowed his bulldog eyes and glared at Daniel.
You jump for it.
He lowered his shoulder and bowled into Daniel, sending him crashing against a metal locker. Daniel giggled. Holding the backpack high, he quickly regained his balance. Derek rushed at Daniel, both hands outstretched. He grabbed for the backpack just as Daniel let go of it. Derek couldn't stop his momentum and slammed headfirst into the wall. The collision didn't faze him. His big belly heaving up and down beneath the Ranger's sweatshirt, he grabbed the backpack off the floor and grinned in triumph. Slowly, he slid it onto his back.
You dudes should be careful. I can mess you up, totally.
Samuel felt a tremor of fear.
Please, Daniel, don't be Daniel. Let it ride.
Daniel raised both hands, as if in surrender.
Truce.
Samuel took a step back.
Okay, truce,
Derek's reply after thinking about it for a while.
You're both new here, so you don't know what's up. I'll give you a break today.
Truce,
Daniel repeated. He stuck his hand out for Derek to shake.
Weird,
thought Samuel.
What's up with the handshake routine?
Truce, Derek said. He stomped away without shaking hands. The bell clanged above their heads. Lunchtime was over. Samuel turned to find Ira, Ethan, and several other kids watching the whole confrontation.
What was that about?
Ira asked Daniel. Daniel's smile made his dimples appear to grow deeper.
You'll see, boyo. You'll see.
Samuel wasn't in on his brother's secret either. But all was revealed just before the final bell that afternoon. Miss Montgomery dismissed the class, and as the kids all gathered their books, stuffed their backpacks, and scurried from the room, Mrs. Maloney came charging into the classroom. Her gray eyes gazed around the room and came to a stop on Derek, who was standing in the front, arguing with a short, red-haired girl.
Derek, can I see you for a moment?
She called. The girl hurried away. Derek eyed the principal warily as she approached. The classroom was nearly emptied. Samuel and Daniel watched from the doorway.
Yes, Mrs. Maloney?
Derek suddenly being very polite. She frowned at him, rubbed her short salt-and-pepper hair.
Derek, I received a disturbing note this afternoon about you.
His mouth dropped open.
Huh? Me? Who sent it?
Miss Montgomery stood up behind her desk and looked on. Mrs. Maloney's eyes locked on Derek, studying him.
It wasn't signed, but it said I would find something interesting in your backpack.
Samuel glanced at his twin. He recognized the eagerness on Daniel's face, the anticipation. He'd seen it before. Derek's blue backpack was on his desk. He stared hard at it, as if it would reveal some secret.
Is there something interesting in your backpack, Derek?
Mrs. Maloney asked softly, almost in a whisper. Derek shook his head.
No way. Just my stuff.
Nothing in there I should know about.
No. No way. Unless you mean a Snickers bar and some Starbursts.
Mrs. Maloney let out a long whoosh of air.
I'm sure you're telling the truth. But why would someone send me that note?
Derek shrugged.
Why don't we just empty out the backpack and settle the whole thing?
Mrs. Maloney kept her voice low and friendly.
No problem.
Derek lifted the pack and started to unzip it.
I don't get it. I totally don't.
Holding the pack by the sides, he upended it and shook it hard, spilling the contents onto the desk. Books, folders, a pencil box, an iPod, a cell phone, a Snickers bar. Samuel squinted across the room, studying the contents. As soon as he saw the silvery watch slide onto the cover of a textbook, he understood. Mrs. Maloney raised her hands to her cheeks.
Well, my faith, that is interesting, she said softly.
She picked up the watch and slid the shiny band through her fingers.
Derek, how did my watch get into your backpack?
Derek's face had gone pale. His mouth was working up and down, but he didn't make a sound. He shrugged.
I don't know.
Do you want to think about it?
Mrs. Maloney remained calm. No sign of anger or even surprise.
I never saw it, really.
Derek's eyes down, shoulders slumped, looking guilty as hell.
I don't know how it got there, really.
But it did tumble out from the bottom of your backpack, right?
Yes, but...
Derek, why don't you gather up your belongings here and follow me to my office for a talk? Do we need to call your mother? What do you think?
She raised her eyes to the door and saw Samuel and Daniel standing, watching the scene intently.
What are you two lads lingering there for? This is no business of yours. Go on now. Don't miss the bus on your first day.
Okay. Bye,
Samuel said, turning to leave.
See you tomorrow,
Daniel said, then quickly added,
Good luck, Derek.
Chapter 28.
We have work to do, Sammy.
Daniel pressed his forehead against the window glass as the school bus bounced along Noyak Road, the tall trees along the side making the shadows dance in his eyes. Samuel shifted the blue canvas backpack in his lap. He knew how impatient Daniel could be. He hoped maybe he would take his time, get to know the terrain, enjoy their new family, their new home, at least a few weeks before setting things in motion.
You gave that lug Derek a good lesson, Daniel.
Daniel tapped Samuel's knee with his fist.
Derek is dead in the pasture. The flies are already circling him.
Samuel laughed, but he could see the growing intensity on his twin's face.
Work to do, Sammy.
What's your hurry, Daniel? Haven't we got it made here?
We've waited a long time,
Daniel murmured, gazing at a deer chewing tall weeds by the roadside.
A long time, boyo.
But look at us now. We're in heaven.
Daniel turned away from the window. He shook his head.
Sammy, it may be heaven, but there's a devil on our cloud.
Samuel felt a chill, muscles tightening at the back of his neck.
Who is the devil?
He knew the answer.
The new pa. Maybe he didn't mean those things we heard him say.
Daniel narrowed his eyes at Samuel.
He meant them. He said he didn't want us to come. He didn't want Mum to bring us here. And he didn't want us to live in the little house in the backyard. Why? Because he didn't know if he could trust us.
That made Samuel giggle.
He can't trust us, boyo.
Daniel didn't smile. His normally pale cheeks had turned rosy pink.
Pa doesn't like us, Sammy. He doesn't want us here, and he shouted at Mum. You saw him shout at Mum because she wants to make us happy and give us everything we want. But Daniel, he doesn't want us to be happy. Pa doesn't want to give us the things we want. You heard him. You heard every word. We have work to do. We have plans, boyo. We cannot let the new Pa stand in our way.
Samuel felt the chill again.
What are you thinking, Daniel? Why are you saying all this? We can't kill the new Pa. We can't. It would make Mum so sad. He's a devil, Sammy. A devil in our heaven.
Samuel grabbed his brother's wrist.
Don't think it. We can't do that to Mum. You're right. You're the sensible guy, Sammy. As sensible as potatoes and chowder. We don't want to kill Pa. We just have to keep him busy.
Samuel shook his head. The backpack suddenly felt heavy in his lap. He let it slide to the bus floor.
Keep him busy?
Daniel nodded. He had that thoughtful look in his eyes that Samuel knew well.
How do we keep him busy? What do you mean?
A thin smile played over Daniel's lips.
I have some ideas. We can keep him real busy, Sammy. Maybe with the coppers.
Chapter 29. Mark watched from the front window as the dark blue Audi pulled up the driveway. A young man with a thick head of wavy brown hair and a seriously tanned face climbed out. He leaned into the car to retrieve a slender laptop case, then walked crisply to the front door, straightening his red necktie and buttoning his dark suit jacket as he walked. Autumn had left 10 minutes earlier, weighed down by a tall stack of folders. She offered Mark several meaningful glances as she left. In return, he gave her a comic wave and a goofy grin, keeping it light.
Nothing serious happened here, Autumn. Did it?
If only he could move back the clock. Would he move it? Maybe not. Moments before, he had kept his eyes on her long, slim legs under the short skirt as she bent to pick up the folders and felt himself starting to get erect again.
Am I crazy? What am I thinking?
Leah, I love you. Why didn't you stay and watch out for me?
What kind of juvenile thinking is that?
Roz had returned with a trunkload of grocery bags and a screaming, hungry Axel. Mark emptied the car for her. He saw the twins tossing a tennis ball back and forth in the backyard. He thought about joining them, but it was time for his meeting with this man from the Institute. What was his name? Hulenberger? Something like that. Mark had suggested they meet and have tea at the American Hotel on Main Street in town. That way there wouldn't be kids underfoot running in and out, demanding his immediate attention. Elena was already angry that he didn't have time for a long discussion about the sleepover she wanted to have with Ruth Ann. But Hulenberger insisted on coming to the house. And here he was at the front door, all tanned and prosperous-looking in a designer suit that fit his slender shoulders perfectly and a crisp white shirt that contrasted his tan. Mr. Hulenberger, come in.
It's Dr. Hulenberger, but call me Richard. Everyone does, even my kids.
A brief hard handshake.
Well, call me Mark.
Come in. Welcome. Mark led him down the hall to his office. He could hear Roz in the kitchen pleading with Axel to sit still. The back door slammed and he heard Ira calling,
Anyone home? Roz?
Nice day, Hulenberger said. I enjoyed the drive. My wife and I have a house in Sagaponack, but we haven't opened it yet. It's almost May, but it still feels like October, doesn't it? All the rain. Incredible. We probably won't open up till Memorial Day. My wife hates the country. She always says she'd rather be on Madison Avenue. Ha!
Was he talking so much out of nervousness, or was he just a chatty guy?
Mark stopped at the office doorway and pictured Autumn bending over the desk again, her short skirt tossed up onto her back, black underpants around her ankles, and that smooth little ass. Oh, God. Would he see her there every time he walked into the office? The whole left side of the desktop was empty. The papers and folders had all been swept aside. He wondered if Hulenberger noticed that something was odd. He led him to the green leather couch against the wall. Hulenberger dropped onto the edge and sat up very straight, lowering his laptop case to the floor. Good posture. He slid a hand down his tie a few times. Nervous habit?
Nice room, Mark. I like that photo behind your desk. I think I know those trees from Brisbane, right?
Australia?
I walked in that very spot and admired those twisty roots all around the tree trunks.
Mark nodded. My wife is a travel writer. Good photographer, too. She writes about adventure travel. Seems a lot of people are into it.
Hannah and I were on a food and wine tour. We weren't impressed with the food in Queensland at all. Dreadful. In fact, we didn't have anything good to eat till we got to Sydney. Were you there with your wife?
No, she was on assignment. I had my patients, you know. And my book. Chit-chat, chit-chat.
Mark suddenly had a heavy feeling in the pit of his stomach. He rolled his desk chair in front of the couch and dropped into it. The room still smelled of autumn's lemony scent.
Nice of you to drive out, Richard.
Richard cleared his throat loudly, adjusted his tie.
Well, I wanted to tell you in person. I didn't think it was right to do it over the phone or by email. Too impersonal.
You mean, about the grant? His voice suddenly tight.
Yes. Should I come right to the point? Yeah, I think I should. We're not going to give you the grant, Mark.
Can silence be loud? To Mark, the silence in the room seemed deafening. Without realizing it, he slammed his head back against the leather seat back, like someone showing shock in a cartoon.
You mean you're not giving the whole amount, only part?
Richard sat even more erect. Mark saw a single bead of sweat appear above one brown eyebrow.
No, I came to offer our regrets. We can't give you any of the grant money at this time.
But my studies... Why can't I finish a sentence? His hands left wet marks on the leather chair arms.
We approve of your work wholeheartedly. That's why we made the initial offer. We felt that your studies with juveniles would add considerably to the literature.
Mark was distracted by movement at the office doorway. He turned and saw Samuel and Daniel standing there, hands in their jeans pockets, serious expressions on their pale faces.
How long have you two been standing there?
He didn't mean to sound so irritated. His mind was churning from the news of the grant money turned down. He should shout at Hulenberger, not at the boys. They didn't reply. Both had their eyes on Hulenberger, staring at him hard as if giving him the evil eye. Then, without a word, they turned and vanished down the hall, bouncing a tennis ball on the floor. He turned back to Hulenberger, who was defiantly gazing at him, not backing down, not avoiding his eyes after bringing this devastating news. Macho guy.
So, Richard, can you explain? If it isn't my study, it's your book.
Can I speak plainly? It's the book. We understand why you wrote such an inflammatory thing, but that's the problem, in a word. See, it's inflammatory.
But it's a sincere study.
It wasn't skeptical in any way. I wasn't just trying to make a buck with a piece of crappy pop psychology. I did my homework, Richard. I did years of research in addition to my own studies.
Whoa, blowing it. He's sitting there coolly, and your voice is rising to soprano.
Richard kept his green-gray eyes on Mark, his face a blank, no emotion.
This man is a fish. I've seen eyes like that on a cod. He thinks he's terrific.
But he didn't just fuck a beautiful 23-year-old girl.
What am I thinking? Am I losing my mind?
How can I say this, Mark? The book has attached a certain notoriety to you. I'm sure you won't disagree with that. Mark didn't reply.
And the grant committee, well, we feel we can't risk backing someone in your position, someone with that kind of controversy following him.
Mark remained silent.
Richard sighed and shook his head. The Institute has such limited funds now. You know how much the government has cut our funding. They're almost not subsidizing us at all. It's a crime. This country will pay for the short-sightedness in Washington. But in the meantime, we have to be very judicious about where we spend what little we have. And I'm afraid...
Mark jumped to his feet, visibly startling his guest.
Okay, I get it. Thanks for coming out, Richard.
Richard gazed up at him, swallowing hard. Mark realized he'd frightened the man. Richard thought Mark was about to get violent. Maybe I should beat the crap out of him. What kind of notoriety would that bring me? But he'd never been in a fight in his life, not even on the playground. He'd never thrown a punch or wrestled another kid on the grass or come home with a black eye. Mark was the good kid, the smart kid, the talker, the kid who was interested in how everything works. He always talked himself out of fights. He used psychology. Richard finally climbed to his feet. He grabbed up his laptop case. Why did he bring it? Did he just feel insecure without it? He pulled out his phone and checked the screen, then he tucked it back into his suit jacket.
I'm really sorry, Mark. I can see you are disappointed.
Yeah, that's the word for it.
My only suggestion, if you want any advice from me, is to apply again in a few years.
A few years?
Yeah. Wait for the notoriety to die down. In a few years, people will forget about your book, right?
A smile crossed Mark's face.
That isn't exactly a compliment.
Richard blushed.
Well, you know what I mean. Wait for the controversy to fade. People have short attention spans, you know that, right? Apply again.
I mean, I'm not guaranteeing anything, but... Mark led him to the door.
Do you believe in freedom of speech, Richard?
Well, yes, of course.
But you don't think I should put my findings and theories in a book?
I didn't say that. Well, the committee has to be careful. I know you understand that. You have a bestseller, Mark. No one begrudges you that. Some psychologists would kill for a bestseller like yours. This grant money...
Would have paid my mortgage for the next 2 years, Mark interrupted, and would have paid for my next book, which I hope will have the same notoriety.
He pulled open the front door. He could see the twins playing catch at the side of Richard's car.
I'm sorry. I mean that sincerely.
Hulenberger stuck out his hand to shake.
I'm just the messenger here, you know? No hard feelings, I hope.
Mark shook his hand. This time it was cold and damp. He watched him walk down the gravel drive to his car. He deposited the laptop in the passenger seat, glanced briefly back at Mark, then climbed behind the wheel. One of the twins fumbled the tennis ball and went running down the driveway after it.
Be careful, Mark shouted to them. Get out of the way, boys. He's going to back out.
He didn't watch Hulenberger drive away. Mark turned and walked into the house, feeling heavy, a headache forming just behind his forehead. He sighed.
I need a glass of wine.
He found Roz in the kitchen, stirring a pot of tomato sauce. She had a gray, long-sleeved t-shirt, torn at the neck, pulled down over the baggy denim cut-off shorts she wore nearly every day. She turned when he entered and read his expression.
Bad news?
You were listening?
No.
The twins told me something bad was happening. That guy looked like the kind who'd bring bad news. Mark opened the refrigerator and pulled out an already open bottle of Chablis.
Yeah, well, bad news is right. I'm not getting the grant.
She stopped stirring.
Because?
Because I'm too controversial. He found a wine glass in the cabinet and poured it full. Mainly, I think, because I'm too successful.
Yes, that's your problem. You're too successful and too rich.
I wish. He took a long sip.
Guess I'm going to have to fill up my patient list, put aside the next book for a while.
The tennis ball bounced hard against the kitchen window. The thud made them both jump. Roz smiled.
The twins are having fun.
Mark took another drink. The wine wasn't helping his headache.
You think they're doing okay?
Yes, I think they're happy. I know you don't approve, but they love their little house back there. I'm surprised they've adjusted so well, aren't you?
I guess. I'd like to see a little more interaction between them and Ira and Elena. Of course, twins often keep to themselves.
He refilled his glass. The Chablis tasted a little sour. Or was that just his mood? He thought about Hulenberger. The guy wasn't actually smug, but he was totally unlikable.
Can I change the subject?
Roz broke into his thoughts.
I've been thinking I need a night off, you know?
A night off? You have a date?
Is that your business? I just need a night off. Think you could hold down the fort? Watch Axel for me, you know? Take care of him for a few hours without killing him?
Mark grinned. Axel and I get along fine. I stuff him full of Oreos and tortilla chips, and he's a good boy.
That's what makes you a good psychologist.
Leah gets home tomorrow night. Maybe she and I'll have a special play date with Axel.
Sounds like a plan. Go tell our four boarders it's dinner time, okay?
Carrying his wine glass, Mark walked to the stairs and shouted up to Ira and Elena.
Dinner! Come down! Now! Okay?
He opened the front door and shouted to the twins.
Dinner!
But they had disappeared, probably to their house and back. The tennis ball lay in the driveway in front of Hulenberger's car.
Huh?
The wine glass nearly slipped from his hand. Something was wrong. Hulenberger's Audi was still in the drive. Mark stepped out onto the stoop and squinted into the evening light. Yes, Hulenberger sat behind the wheel, not moving, and his head, it was tilted back, way back. Wrong. All wrong. Something was terribly wrong.
Richard? Hey, Richard!
He shouted. Hulenberger didn't move.
Richard! Hey! What's wrong? Are you okay?
He shouted louder with his hands cupped around his mouth. No, the man didn't move. Mark started to jog toward the car, but he stopped halfway. Hulenberger's head, it wasn't right. He spun away, his mind whirling, from the wine, from the headache. So hard to think clearly. Oh my God. Oh my God, what was happening here? Richard, can you answer me? A tightness gripped Mark's chest. A wave of cold washed over his body, a cold he'd never felt before. He lurched to the car. What was splattered over the windshield? Richard? Richard! Breathing hard, he gazed into the open window, grabbed the bottom of the window with both hands, leaned toward the wheel, and screamed. A long, shrill scream of horror from somewhere deep in his throat. No! Fucking no! Oh my God! Oh shit! Oh my God! Dark blood splattered the windshield as if someone had heaved a can of paint over the glass, and Hulenberger. Hulenberger. The blood had run down his shirt, his suit, like a sweater of blood. His head tilted back, his throat, it had been torn open, ripped open? Oh my God, fucking no! Fighting the tide of nausea, the drumming of his heart that made the blood pulse at his temples, Mark pushed himself back, away from the car. He turned to the house. He saw the twins standing at the top of the driveway. Get back! Go back! Don't come down here! Go back! He waved them away with both hands. They turned and ran. Had they seen anything? His hands felt wet. He raised them to his face. They were covered in blood. Hulenberger's blood. He shook them hard as if trying to toss the blood away. Then he staggered into the house, through the living room to the kitchen, where Roz was tilting the tomato sauce pan over a big bowl of spaghetti. Roz, go on, please. So breathless she didn't hear him. He grabbed her shoulder, startling her. Her eyes locked on his hands. Mark! Oh my God, is that blood? Roz, call the police. Hurry, call the police. Call the police!
Chapter 30. It's a 1084, Vince. We're on the scene.
I gotta learn those numbers, Chaz. I never know what Vince is talking about.
Forget about it, Andy. No one knows what Vince is talking about.
Pavano peered out the window as his partner, Chaz Pinto, eased the car up the gravel driveway.
Where are we? Why does this look familiar?
John Street, dude. You took the call 10 minutes ago, remember?
A dark Audi stood in the drive. Chaz stopped the black and white a few feet behind it.
It's taking me a while to get oriented, you know? We're by the water, aren't we?
Yeah, the bay is over there.
Pinto pointed out the side door. They both gazed at the car in front of them.
The caller was a woman. She didn't say what the problem was. Something about a car in the driveway. The driver...
I see him. The back of his head.
Not moving. Heart attack.
Hope so. That would make it easy.
Pinto leaned toward the radio.
We're gonna check out the car, Vince. You there?
Of course I'm here. Where else would I be, Pinto? Don't sit there holding hands, you two. Get out and take a look.
The driver appears to be in the car.
The front door of the house swung open, and a dark-haired man in jeans and a white polo shirt stepped out. Pavano's eyes went wide.
Hey, I know that dude.
His breath caught in his throat.
Oh, wow. Oh, no. I don't believe this. What's your problem, Andy?
Pavano pushed the car door open, flipped his half-smoked Camel to the driveway, and lowered his feet to the ground.
I've been here. That night, remember? The rain? I had the wrong house. I told him his wife was dead.
Pinto let out a hoarse wheeze of a laugh.
We're still talking about that one. Behind your back, you know. It's classic. We'll be talking about that asshole move for a long time.
Thanks, partner.
Pavano stretched his lanky body, adjusted his black uniform cap lower over his eyes.
Maybe the guy won't remember me. Yeah, sure, what are the chances?
Pinto was approaching the driver's side of the Audi. Pavano followed, boots crunching on the gravel driveway, eyes on the man inside the car.
Hello, sir? Sir? Are you all right?
The man from inside the house came running down the driveway.
I'm Mark Sutter, he shouted. This is my house.
Pavano waved him back.
Please, stay there. The driver's side window was down.
Hey, sir.
Pinto shouted loudly into the car, even though he was just a few feet away.
Sir, are you okay?
He's not okay, he's fucking dead,
Sutter cried. He didn't heed Pavano's instruction. He ran up beside them, breathing hard.
He's dead. I saw him. It's horrible.
Pinto and Pavano both stooped and leaned into the window at the same time.
Oh, my God. Oh, fuck no. Fuck no.
I can't believe it, Sutter stammered.
Pavano frantically waved him back.
Please, stay back, sir. Let us do our job.
A pair of blonde boys were watching from the front door.
Get the kids away, sir, please.
The boys stepped out onto the stoop.
Is he sick?
Please, Mr. Sutter, get those boys inside.
Oh, fuck, this is impossible,
Pinto gasped.
His whole throat. It's open. Opened up like ripped open.
No, it's burned, totally burned. See the black skin around the hole? The skin is charred. It's flaking off.
Pavano turned away, his stomach tightening into a knot. The man's throat had been cut or ripped open. He shut his eyes and still pictured the dark red flesh inside, blackened. A hole, a gaping hole in the man's neck. Thick dark blood caked down the front of the man's suit, puddled in his lap.
Someone opened his throat and let him bleed out.
How did this happen? How could it happen? Here, in my driveway,
Sutter said, shaking his head.
Mr. Sutter, please, go in your house, wait for us, and keep those boys away from the window. You don't want them to see this.
Sutter started to turn away, then stopped.
Hey, I remember you.
Pavano ignored him and turned back to his partner. Pinto reached for the door handle, then thought better of it.
Fingerprints. Look, there's blood smeared on the door here. Might be good fingerprints. We need backup here. We need an ME. We need the crime scene guys.
Pavano raced back to the patrol car, flung the door open, and grabbed the radio.
Vince, we have a homicide here. We need backup. We need someone with a strong stomach.
I take it you don't need an ambulance?
No, we don't need an ambulance. This is a murder scene. We need CS guys. We have a man with a giant hole in his neck and...
Save the details, Andy. I'm eating my dinner. 10-4.
Just hurry, Vince. I've never seen anything like this.
Oh, you haven't seen much, have you, Andy?
Who told him he always has to have the last word? And who told him he couldn't be serious, even for a crime this horrible?
Pavano slammed the patrol car door and made his way back to Pinto. The bigger, older cop leaned with his hands on his waist, peering into the victim's window. Finally, he turned, removed his cap, and scratched his thinning flat top.
It's like a horror movie, Andy. The skin is all scorched, the hole is as big as a grapefruit, and it looks empty inside, just burned skin.
He swallowed. His teeth clicked.
I never realized he has false teeth, Pavano thought.
And then,
why am I thinking about Chaz's teeth when I'm staring at a guy with a giant knot hole in his neck?
Pinto pulled Pavano back from the car.
Stop looking at him. Your face is green. No shit.
Pavano nodded and turned his back on the Audi. It didn't make him feel any better.
I came out to Sag Harbor to take it easy, to get away from all the fucking crime in the city, maybe get back with Sari. What the hell happened here?
We can't do anything, Pinto said. Not till the crime scene guys get here.
Let's go inside and talk to that Sutter guy.
Pavano nodded.
He acted totally innocent.
That's the first sign he did it, right?
Pinto patted him on the back.
Too much TV, Andy.
The sun had almost disappeared behind the house. The sky darkened to gray, and a cool breeze rattled the still bare trees. They stepped onto the front stoop. Pinto leaned close.
Andy, tell Sada this time you got it right. The victim really is dead.
Shut the fuck up, will you?
Pavano could feel his face turn hot. That rainy night on this doorstep had to be the worst moment of his life. And now here he was, ringing the doorbell again. It took only a few seconds for Sutter to pull open the door. He had a glass of white wine in his right hand. Pavano saw the hand tremble. A few drips of wine spilled to the floor.
How did someone do that to him? Can you tell me?
Hard to say, Pinto replied softly, eyes narrowed on Sutter.
Pavano didn't see the blonde boys, but he saw another boy, dark-haired, small, peering down from the top of the stairs.
Dad, is everything okay?
Why are the police here?
It's okay, Ira. Go back to your room, all right?
But aren't we going to finish dinner? My spaghetti's getting cold.
We'll finish dinner in a short while. Please, get up to your room and tell Elena to stay up there, too.
Sutter can't hide how tense he is. Tense because he murdered the guy?
Sir, I'm Officer Pinto. He's Officer Pavano. As you can see, we're from the Sag Harbor Police Department.
Sutter gazed hard at Pavano. We've met, he said quietly.
Sir, can we go somewhere more private?
Pinto had Sutter by the elbow.
Sure, come into my office. I can't tell you much about Richard, but...
Is that his name, Richard?
Do you know his full name?
They stepped into the book-lined office. Pavano admired the dark wood, the big desk, the floor-to-ceiling bookshelves.
Well, yes, his name is Richard Hulenberger.
Pavano pulled out his phone. He brought up the memo app and typed in Richard Hulenberger. The phone had replaced the little black notebook that cops used to carry in their shirt pockets. Pavano missed his notebook, but he was grateful. He could never find a pencil to write with.
Is he a friend of yours?
Pinto asked. Sutter motioned for them to sit on the green leather couch.
A friend? No. The first time I ever met him.
Hands still trembling, he set the wine glass down near the edge of the desktop. The two cops remained standing. Pavano typed, "not a friend," into his phone. Pinto shifted his weight. He gazed around the room.
Mr. Sutter, before we talk about anything else, I need to ask you one question.
Pavano watched as Sutter jammed his hands into his jeans pocket.
Yes? What?
Pinto took a breath, for dramatic effect.
Mr. Sutter, do you own a blowtorch?
Sutter blinked.
Why, yes. Yes, I do.
Chapter 31. A heavy silence for a moment. Sutter lowered himself to the edge of the desk, hands still stuffed in his pockets.
I don't understand. Why are you asking me about a blowtorch?
What kind of blowtorch do you have?
Pinto crossed his arms over his chest. Pavano noted on his phone, blowtorch.
Let me think. It's a 15-liter flame gun, I think that's what it's called. It's propane. Do you want to see it? It's in the garage.
Pinto motioned for Sutter to sit still.
The crime scene officers will want to see it, thank you, but I'd like to ask a few more questions first.
He rubbed his chin.
15-liter? That's a pretty big mother. Why do you have it?
Sutter twisted his face. Was he confused, struggling to figure out why he was being questioned about his blowtorch? Or was he pretending? Pavano admired Pinto for thinking of a blowtorch. It was a good notion. That man's scorched neck wound could definitely be caused by a blowtorch.
I use it for melting ice, Sutter said. You know, in the winter, ice covers the front stoop. It gets treacherous. I melt ice off the driveway with it, too.
Why are you asking me?
So tell us, who is Richard... what's his name?
Pinto interrupted. Hulenberger. He's from the Blakeman Institute in the city. Pavano typed rapidly on the phone keyboard. He let Pinto ask the questions. Pinto was doing a good job. Pavano could see the Audi in the driveway from the office window. So far, the other cops hadn't shown up.
And you never met him? He drove here from the city because...
He wanted to meet with me. I'd applied for quite a large grant.
And he came to tell you?
Sutter lowered his eyes to the floor. It took a few seconds to answer.
He came to tell me they were turning me down.
No grant. The bitterness in Sutter's voice brought Pavano to attention. He felt his heart start to pound a little faster.
He brought you bad news,
Pinto said softly.
Very bad news.
Sutter nodded. He didn't raise his eyes.
And how did that make you feel? Angry? Fucking angry?
Sutter raised his eyes. His face showed a new intensity. He pulled out his hands and held them tensely at his sides.
Do I need a lawyer?
I'm just asking, Pinto replied with a shrug.
Somebody brings me bad news, it makes me angry, you know? Kill the messenger? Know what I'm saying?
I'm a psychologist, officer, he said heatedly. I think I know how to control my anger so that I don't murder anyone who brings me disappointing news.
You're a psychologist with a blowtorch?
I explained the blowtorch. He uttered a cry of frustration. Is that what happened out there? Are you telling me Richard was murdered with a blowtorch? He left my house, sat down in his car, and someone took a blowtorch to him in my driveway?
Pinto made a calming motion with both hands. Pavano could see this guy was strung tight, but the situation would make anyone a little tense. And he didn't have much of a motive for killing Hulenberger, not if he was telling the truth. But was he hiding some things? Did he know Hulenberger better than he was letting on?
We should advise him to call his lawyer. It's definitely a homicide, Mr. Sutter, Pinto said, his hands still raised as if warding Sutter off. The guy didn't take a blowtorch to himself. The crime scene guys will want to see your blowtorch, and they'll have a lot more questions. If you'd feel more comfortable with a lawyer present...
Yes, I'll call my lawyer. No, wait, I didn't see anything. I don't know anything. Why do I need a lawyer?
Mr. Sutter, please, take a deep breath. Pinto said softly.
Pavano could see the turmoil in Sutter's mind. His eyes were darting from side to side. He was thinking hard about something.
I have to tell you one thing, Sutter said, clasping his hands together in his lap. There are fingerprints. I mean, I touched the car.
Pinto raised one eyebrow.
Fingerprints? I grabbed the side of the car, you know, the window. I wasn't thinking. I didn't know... I got blood on my hands, blood from the side of the car. I was still washing it off when you drove up.
Pinto gave Pavano a quick glance. Pinto was suspicious of this guy.
Thanks for telling us, Pavano said, typing on his phone.
The doorbell rang. Pavano and Pinto followed Sutter into the hall. A woman carrying a little boy on her shoulder opened the front door. Pavano remembered her from the first time he was here. A tall African-American man stepped into the entryway. He had a noticeably big melon-shaped head, shaved bald, and a silver ring in one ear. He wore a baggy brown suit, wrinkled and frayed at the cuffs. He had a dark brown dress shirt underneath, and a blue bow tie tilted under his chin.
Can I help you? Sutter motioned the woman away.
I'll take care of this, Roz. The man ignored Sutter and approached Pavano and Pinto.
Are you the officers who discovered this?
Both cops nodded.
I'm Harrison, the ME.
Pinto squinted at him.
You're new? I haven't been new for 30 years. I'm from Riverhead. You've heard of it?
You're an ME or a comedian?
I'm not as funny as your face. Let's start again. There are CS guys dusting the car right now. Then they'll sweep for fibers. You know, stuff for the DNA lab guys. You're familiar with that, right? Or are you new?
Pavano's new, Pinto said, motioning with his eyes. He's out here from the city. Harrison had one brown eye and one blue eye. He focused the blue eye on Pinto.
Am I going to get his thrilling life story now, or are we investigating a goddamn homicide?
Sorry, Dr. Harrison, Pinto said. We've been questioning Mr. Sutter here.
We'll get to you, Mr. Sutter.
Harrison gave him a nod, then turned back to the officers.
Did you touch anything? Open the door, roll down the window, shake hands with the victim, muss up his hair?
Pinto squinted at Harrison.
Are you for real?
We didn't touch a thing, Pavano stepped in, but Sutter did. He had his hands on the bottom of the window, smeared the blood. Harrison squinted at Sutter and tisk-tisked.
Pinto and I looked into the car, but we stayed back. Then we called in right away, Pavano explained. Do you expect a Nobel Prize for that?
Pinto exploded.
What the fuck, Harrison? What's your problem?
Pavano just wanted to get out of the house. There were kids upstairs. They were probably listening to all this.
What happened to those two little blonde boys?
Have you examined the body at all, doctor?
Pavano asked. Harrison pulled a soiled handkerchief from his jacket and mopped his bald head.
Yeah. I did a cursory exam before the CS guys arrived.
He tucked the handkerchief away and fiddled with his bow tie.
And could you determine the cause of death?
Sutter uttered a groan. Pavano turned and saw him gripping the bottom of the banister, his face pale.
Are you feeling okay?
Not really, Sutter uttered. I mean, a murder in my driveway? I feel kind of sick.
Why don't you go sit down? Get a glass of water, Pavano instructed. We'll come back to you, okay?
Sutter nodded but didn't reply. He made his way back toward his office.
Cause of death? Pavano repeated to Harrison when Sutter was out of hearing.
Officer, you know I can't say till I do the whole goddamn exam.
He motioned them outside. The cool evening air felt soothing on Pavano's hot face. Harrison led the way to the Audi, where two uniformed officers were combing every inch of it.
You want to know a cause of death from my first cursory exam? Okay. I'd say it was asphyxiation.
Pinto and Pavano both uttered sounds of surprise. Pinto removed his cap and scratched his head.
Asphyxiation? What makes you say that?
A grim smile formed on Harrison's face.
Here, I'll show you. You didn't eat dinner yet, right?
We didn't eat dinner. Why?
Because you probably wouldn't be able to keep it down.
Another one of your jokes?
The smile faded from the big man's face.
No joke.
He pulled open the back door. He pointed to something stretched across the back seat. It looked like a wet pink snake to Pavano.
No, wait, some kind of long pasta noodle. Jagged on both ends.
Dark streaks along the sides.
What are you showing us?
Pinto demanded. What is that?
The man's windpipe, Harrison said. Whoever killed him ripped out his windpipe while he was still alive.
Chapter 32. Pavano again let Pinto do the questioning while he studied Sutter's sister. Sitting across from them in Sutter's office, Roz kept her hands clasped tightly in her lap, squeezing her fingers. But it was the only sign of nervousness. She seemed like a straightforward woman, and Pavano believed what she told them, which was nothing useful. She had come home from grocery shopping and was in the kitchen the whole time Hulenberger and Sutter were meeting in the office. She had heard voices, but she hadn't seen Hulenberger and definitely hadn't seen him leave the house. She hadn't heard anything unusual. Now she was worried about upsetting the kids.
You certainly don't think the kids saw what happened?
She asked.
We have to talk to them, you know, be as thorough as possible, Pinto said, glancing at the notes on Pavano's phone. It's possible they saw or heard something helpful.
Elena and Ira were upstairs in their rooms, Roz told them. I'm sure they didn't see a thing. And the twins, I'm not sure where they were. Probably in the guest house out back.
Ma'am, could you bring them in, one by one?
Pinto asked, speaking softly.
A horrible murder like this could upset them terribly, Sergeant. Ira is very delicate. You might say he's troubled. And the twins just arrived here.
Pavano raised his eyes. Arrived here?
Mark and Leah adopted them. She brought them home less than 2 weeks ago. It's hard enough for them to adjust if you...
We'll do our best not to upset them, ma'am, Pinto said. You and Mr. Sutter are welcome to stay in the room when we talk to them.
Where is Mr. Sutter?
Pavano asked. Sutter had slipped away while they were questioning his sister. Roz sighed.
I think he's trying to phone Leah, his wife. She's in the city.
Pinto shifted his weight on the desk chair. He suddenly looked old and weary. Pavano knew he was 10 years older than he, but he looked even older than that. Frayed. That's the strange word that popped into Pavano's mind. The frayed life of a cop. With another warning to be careful, the sister went to round up the four kids. Pavano picked up a pink paperweight from the desk and tossed it from hand to hand. It took him a while to recognize it as a porcelain model of a human brain. The color reminded him of the slender windpipe tossed on the back seat of the victim's car. He set the